You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected and picked up Rosie. He'll take it in. It's a pick six and a touchdown.
Bell. Into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, coming to you courtesy of CBS Sports HQ, the brand new streaming sports news network, which has 24/7 live coverage of sports and costs you absolutely nothing, 100% free at all times, loaded with the things that I always look for in sports coverage: highlights, breaking news, fantasy advice, gambling picks, although I don't know that they're going to be as good as my brother Craig's, but still useful, and quality analysis. All those things are first rate on the CBS Sports HQ, and they're not something that you get very often from a lot of these big-time sports personalities, Skip Bayless. And the best part is, not only is it completely free 24/7, it doesn't even require a subscription or a login. You just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, and any other connected device at any time to watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real sports fans, just like you get here on Play Like a Jet, at the great price of absolutely nothing. You don't even have to log in or sign up for anything. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ today. This is the Jets Jaguars pregame report. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And I am joined to break down the keys to the game by the owner, the operator, the lead reporter, the whole shebang over at JetsInsider.com. Of course, above all that, a very big deal, Mr. Chris Nimbley. So, Chris, the first thing I wanted to bring up is this injury report. Just to go over this real quickly, and then, Chris, you can correct me if I'm wrong in my assumptions here. Albert McClellan, Kelvin Beachum, Trenton Cannon, CJ Mosley, all listed as out, so none of them will play. Osemele is also not going to play, despite being listed as doubtful. Herndon and Hewitt listed as doubtful, but it doesn't sound like they're going to play. Henry Anderson listed as questionable, but I get the impression that he may not play. And then you have Braxton Berrios and Tremaine Johnson, both of whom I'm led to believe will play. Is that about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. The Herndon thing is, I feel like he's practiced, he's been limited. I feel like he should be ready to go. But then again, we saw what happened with CJ Mosley's groin. So who knows? But these injury issues have not been kind to the Jets this year. They have certainly made things a lot tougher than they needed to be. And things were plenty tough as is. So
certainly the case. And I'll tell you this much. I think a lot of people were really excited to have Christopher Herndon back last week. That didn't happen. And now people are starting to get anxious and wondering if this is going to end up being a lost season for him. I sure hope not, because especially if they trade Robbie Anderson, but even if they don't, Herndon is going to be an important piece in this offense. And if he's not able to play significant snaps this season, that's going to be very, very disappointing. Chris, let's talk about the keys to the game, which will not, unfortunately, include Christopher Herndon. And the first key is the most obvious. I'm going to say it, even though I'm sure everybody realizes it without me having to say it. Sam Darnold is going to have to bounce back. I know it's a stunning revelation, but here's the deal. He doesn't necessarily have to be as good as he was against the Cowboys, but he sure as hell can't be as bad as he was against the Patriots. He's got to show people that he's back on track, that the Patriots game was an aberration, and that he can spend the rest of the season playing well against the other teams that are on the Jets' schedule, because if he struggles against the Jaguars, a lot of people are going to start asking a lot of questions, and you know how this goes. I know that Darnold is somebody that's thought of as unshakable and unflappable, but if he had that game against the Patriots and then has another bad one against the Jaguars, and this is his second year, not his rookie year, at a certain point, you have to wonder if this could get inside his head.
Yeah, and with this matchup, it's interesting because Jags are a team, especially now that Jalen Ramsey's no longer there. Jags are a team that likes to play a little more zone as opposed to man. But, you know, a big talking point people have been talking about is teams are going to run cover zero and they're going to blitz the hell out of Darnold until Darnold can show that he can beat it. Now, the problem with that line of thought is teams aren't built like the Patriots. There aren't a lot of teams that are defenses that are built like the Patriots. So not teams can't pull that off, not at that same level and the same effectiveness as the Patriots did. But it certainly wouldn't surprise me to see the Jags mix up their game plan a little bit, run some more man and do some more things along those lines to at least in certain – you know, pick their spots, maybe a third down to try to get it. So Darnold will have to be able to beat that at times, and he's just going to have to play better. Now, obviously, again, we talked about this. He didn't really have much of a shot. He played terrible with the tiny little sliver of a shot he had. But if he's not getting pressured and rushed, and if he's not running for his life and throwing the ball away, then you should absolutely expect and hope to see more from him. I know last week during our mailbag thing, we had the question about Darnold's footwork and how sometimes it gets sloppy. And I was talking about how that a lot of times it doesn't matter. But there's a difference between when he's playing scared and all that footwork and all the fundamentals goes out of whack, and when he's thrown off his back foot and early – because that's just what the play dictates. He can like adjust as he's doing that better than when he's scared and he's just kind of running backwards and just even it up, because that's what we saw against the Patriots. But no Jalen Ramsey, Marcell Dareus is out. The Jags still have a very good defense. Still have to worry about Calais Campbell, obviously, against this offensive line. You have to look at the rookie Josh Allen. I can picture him having a fairly big game just so Jets fans will be like, we should have got him. So there's still a lot of concerns when facing this Jags defense, and obviously the concerns about the Jets offense without Herndon, with the offensive line banged up and not that good to begin with. So it'll be interesting to see if maybe they can lean on Le'Veon Bell a little more this week, who actually, you know, ran pretty good against the Patriots. But maybe Marcell Dareus out, that can make that a little easier. But no matter what happens, Darnold has to play better. He can't have anywhere near those turnovers. Now, I'll argue those turnovers were whatever, because the interception or three and out wasn't going to make a huge difference against the Patriots on that night. But he can't have that against the Jags. They can't hope to win with that, and you can't hope Darnold's confidence will remain strong going forward if he turns in another performance like that. So that's going to be huge, and he's just going to have to make do with the weapons he has right now. It's Robbie's still there, Jamison Crowder's still there, Le'Veon Bell. So they're going to have to figure out ways to get this done. But I think that they can. They should certainly have a lot more success than they did against the Patriots. But like you said, they don't need him to play like he did against the Cowboys necessarily. It just has to be a lot closer to the Cowboys than closer to what the Patriots.
This should be an interesting test for Sam Darnold, because we know the Patriots are on a historic pace. They are the number one defense in the league by a wide margin. The Dallas Cowboys are 25th in the league, and the Jaguars are 17th. So the Jaguars are towards the middle. The Patriots are at the top. The Cowboys are towards the back end. So this game could be a bit of a litmus test for Darnold. Now, let's keep in mind they're 17th, but they're missing Marcell Dareus. And like you said, they just traded Jalen Ramsey. So that'll help a little bit. And it'll probably knock them down a couple of spots as the rest of the season progresses. But still, this is more of a normal defense that Sam Darnold is going to face. So if he's going to get back on track against the middle of the road defense, this would be a good spot for it. He's on the road and he's going to have to prove against this defense that he has put the nightmare of the Patriots game behind him. As we said, doesn't have to have a lights out game, but does have to be good in this game against the Jaguars, not only for himself, but for the team, because the team's going to win. They're going to need Sam Darnold to look much, much better than he did against the Patriots. Although, to be fair, wouldn't take much considering what went down on Monday night. Another key to the game is going to be the offensive line. We say this a lot, Chris, but it bears repeating. Michael Nania pointed this out. I think it was PFF that had this stat. And this is where PFF actually comes in handy because their player grades are ridiculous. But Le'Veon Bell is leading the league by a wide margin in yards after contact. Chris, this is insane. 93% of Le'Veon Bell's yards come after contact. That's unheard of. It means that he's making just about every single play by himself. The offensive line is going to have to find a way to help him a little bit more, and they're obviously going to have to find a way to let Sam Darnold feel more comfortable back there. The fact that he can move in and out of the pocket is good, and it helps a lot more than having a stationary guy like Luke Falk, but you can't put him in a situation where, I hate to repeat the phrase, but let's be honest, it fits here, he ends up seeing ghosts again because the offensive line can't keep the Jacksonville front seven from taking his head off. They've got to do a better job in helping Le'Veon Bell create plays, and they have got to do a better job of at least being somewhat competent protecting Sam Darnold. I know this is an obvious point, but it's also a factual one. If the Jets can't do these things, there's a very strong chance they're going to lose to Jacksonville.
Yeah, let me just go on a little tangent here about that, the whole seeing ghosts thing. I don't understand what the big deal about any of this is. This is a normal phrase that gets thrown around a lot, and it's not just young rookies who experience this. Think back to the year the Broncos won the Super Bowl with Peyton Manning and what they did to Tom Brady in that AFC Championship game. I don't know that Brady uttered those words during that game, but I would not be surprised because he was playing that in that game like he was seeing ghosts. If you get pressured that much, it doesn't matter the quarterback. That's the feeling they get. It's a common phrase thrown around in football games when that happens. It's not a big deal. I don't get how this is seen as a, like, Sam Darnold is weak because he said it. I don't get why it should be embarrassing. I don't get why they should be upset about ESPN broadcasting it. I don't get anything about it. But back to your point with Le'Veon Bell, I mean, getting 93% of yards coming after contact, it means he's getting hit, but pretty much behind the line of scrimmage on almost every running play. That's absurd. And the fact that he's able to have been as productive as he is with that stat, that shows you how good he still is. But as good as he is, having such a terrible offensive line is an impossible thing to overcome. So they have to block better for Darnold. They definitely have to block better for Bell, because if they don't, they're not going to be able to even have any semblance of a running game. And as much as I am a believer in Darnold still, and I'm not worried about him, he's not at a point where he can survive without a running game. He needs to be able to have a threat of a running game to help balance it out. And right now they don't have that, and that's not Le'Veon Bell's fault. It's because they can't block anybody.
The seeing ghost thing, I've already talked about this, but I'll just throw this in there. I really don't think it was a big deal. It just plays into the LOL Jets narrative, but Obviously, tons of quarterbacks have seen ghosts. You've heard Brett Favre and Kurt Warner both come out and talk about this. It just so happened that they weren't mic'd up when it was happening. But this is a common phrase used by quarterbacks, and it's something that happens a lot, especially against the Patriots defense. In fact, Dan Orlovsky had a breakdown of this and said, you'd have been seeing ghosts too if this had been you back there, no matter who you are at quarterback.
If it was me, I'd be a ghost because I'd be dead and I'd be a ghost.
I think it's just the optics and the fact that a lot of more casual football fans are A, unfamiliar with the term, and B, don't realize how common that is. I do understand the anger on the Jets side of it only because I think that they are looking to use this as a way to distract people from the fact that they lost 33-0, which is the only reason that that comment really had any value in the first place. Because if the Jets weren't getting their heads kicked in, nobody cares about some sort of comment like that from the quarterback. It's only because the game went so poorly. So I think that's really what that is. The Jets are trying to deflect from just how bad everything went in the Monday night game and instead try and yell and scream at ESPN and NFL films about this. But of course, ESPN was going to air this. It was easily the most interesting thing that they got. Usually you don't get anything interesting from a player who's mic'd up, especially somebody like Sam Darnold, who's not exactly a fiery player or somebody who's known for giving great quotes. So all around, this is a non-story. It's just something that now has become a meme and a way for people to make fun of the Jets again. And the way that the Jets can counteract this is not by yelling and screaming at NFL films or ESPN. It's by going out there and playing better football and Sam Darnold turning this around, which I think we all agree there's a good chance that he will. So that's really all there is to it when it comes to the seeing ghosts thing. I do think that some of the memes have been funny, but if Darnold starts to play better, then this stuff is all going to fade away. Next key, Chris, is going to be Adam Gase, and can he do a better job coaching?
Can't do a worse job.
Yeah, this was not his finest hour against the Patriots. Let's put this qualifier in there. The offensive line was dreadful again. Sam Darnold was terrible, but that was a really, really uninspired and, quite frankly, awful performance by Adam Gase against the Patriots. That was a clinic on how not to coach. We had to cut him a lot of slack because of the fact that he had Luke Falk the last few weeks. Then, of course, we saw what Darnold did against the Cowboys and said, maybe this is more what we should expect. Then the Patriots game came and we saw what we all feared from Adam Gase. Now he's going to have to start to turn things around against the Jaguars, because I can tell you this, Chris, we both agreed that there's a very strong chance that Gase, no matter what, ends up as the head coach next year, barring some sort of crazy meltdown where he gets into a fist fight with Christopher Johnson or something like that. But if the offense continues to play anything close to the way they played against the Patriots the rest of the year, there may be a change.
Yeah, if they turn in like, you know, another two or three just clunkers like that, Christopher Johnson is going to have to take a long, hard look at it. Because, again, you have to remember, Adam Gase was hired specifically for Sam Darnold, get the most out of Sam Darnold, and we cut him all the slack with the Luke Falk, understandably and deservingly. But if Darnold comes back and then it's like it looks like that a handful of times, I don't know how you can feel good going into next season about that. It's really hard to imagine Gase being able to coach a game worse than he did last week. The best news about last week is that it's the last time that the Jets have to see the Patriots this year. They're not going to face that type of defense again. Really the closest thing is the Steelers defense, but that's way different, and it's not even comparable. I still have the Bills defense, which is really good too, but again, not comparable to the Jets defense, the Patriots defense. So, but that it doesn't matter right now. All that matters is Jacksonville and how they address them. It's a solid defense. It's not an elite defense. It's not a defense that I can just sit here and say, hey, they're just that good. And if they're struggling, and especially if it's because of coaching mistakes, that's going to create a lot of attention and a lot of talk, because he was hired to get the most out of Darnold and to help Darnold. And he certainly didn't do that against the Patriots. And Darnold was bad himself against the Patriots, but he needs some help from his coaching staff to put him in the right positions. And he didn't do that against New England. He has to help him and make life a little easier on Sam so he can do what he is really good at.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Now let's go to the defensive side of the ball for some more keys to the game, Chris, and we will start with the secondary. They are going to have to do a better job of covering opposing wide receivers than they've done the rest of the season. Again, a fairly obvious point, but let's be real about this. As I joked with you before we started recording, you could argue that one of Tremaine Johnson's best plays of the season was getting called for a 15-yard pass interference penalty, because if he hadn't grabbed the guy, it would have been a 70-yard touchdown instead. When I'm sitting here telling you could make a credible case that that was one of his best plays this season, you know that things have not gone well for Tremaine Johnson. Daryl Roberts has been just as bad. The only difference is at least Daryl Roberts is trying out there. Tremaine Johnson looks like he's jogging half of the time, looks like he can't be bothered, and looks like basically he took the money and, well, I'd say run, but he hasn't done much running this season. He took the money and limped, I guess. So they're going to have to do a better job of containing the Jaguars' receivers and weapons in the passing game. Obviously, it's different than it was against the Patriots because of the fact that you don't have Tom Brady back there. You don't have a player like Julian Edelman with the Jaguars. But still, they're going to have to find a way to at least do bend but don't break, which is what they did for most of the beginning of the season.
Yeah. DJ Chark has been absolutely amazing this season. D.D. Westbrook is an excellent receiver. Chris Conley is a solid third receiver. They don't really have a tight end to worry about. You don't really have to worry about Leonard Fournette in the passing game. But the corners, you know, Brian Poole has been really good, but Roberts and Tremaine have been bad. And the matchup with these receivers does not bode well in the Jets' favor. And then there's the thing about Gardner Minshew, and the reason why he's been playing so well is because of his ability to feel pressure, to extend plays, buy extra time, move in and out of the pocket, and wait for these receivers to get open. So if the Jets aren't sacking Minshew and forcing him to get the ball out early, then that's going to make the job for those corners that much harder, and there's just no way Daryl Roberts and Tremaine Johnson can stick DJ Chark and D.D. Westbrook. They have no chance to stick those guys, especially if Minshew is able to buy a little extra time and let them run around to get open.
I should say that as good as Chark and Westbrook have been, especially Chark as a rookie, what I was saying with Julian Edelman is obviously that he's a much more polished route runner, and the timing and precision between Brady and Edelman is much different than with Gardner Minshew and DJ Chark and D.D. Westbrook. So it's a different dynamic, but certainly some dangerous weapons with the Jaguars in the passing game. And now we get to the fifth and final key to this matchup, Chris, which is, of course, Gardner Magnum Minshew. And I say Magnum, and I'll repeat this again, because he looks like Tom Selleck in Magnum P.I., which is remarkable because I think he's like 23 or 24 years old. But you have just described, Chris, what has made Minshew more successful than most people thought he would be, which is, of course, his ability to recognize pressure, to get out on the run, to be able to make use of these targets, and to be able to get the Jaguars offense to be pretty productive, especially for an offense that most people thought was not going to be that productive once Nick Foles went out. So they've got to get pressure on Gardner Minshew, and it has to be at least along the lines of what happened against Dallas. They only sacked Dak Prescott once, and that was a coverage sack by Jordan Jenkins, but they were in his face all day. Quinnen Williams was in his face. Leonard Williams was in his face. Foley Fatakasi was in his face. Kyle Phillips was in his face. They're going to need something like that against Jacksonville, because if they give Gardner Minshew all the time in the world, we just talked about it, those cornerbacks are going to get eaten alive. So they're going to have to find a way to get the kind of pressure that they did against Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, this is one of those situations. They have to pressure him, but they also have to kind of keep contained. Because again, if he's rolling out and can roll to the side and outside the pocket and buy around, dance around time there. That's where, you know, DJ Chark will be able to run free and get open and break some big plays. But yeah, that's how they have to do. They have to get the pressure, as not as much the sacks, but to make him get rid of the ball quicker than he wants to. They have to hit him. They have to rattle him. They have to make him see ghosts. That's how they're going to have to approach this and really attack him. They have to be aggressive and bring it to him, as opposed to letting him just sit back there and pick them apart, because that's where it'll be really dangerous. Like I said, they just have to worry about him being able to roll outside and buy time that way. If he gets to do that, that's where he can start to pick them apart. But, you know, this isn't too tall of a task for them. They should be able to, you know, mostly hold this offense in check, even with their problems at cornerback. So it's just, you just have to make sure that you have to limit his ability to make those big plays and those magical type plays that really lead to the legend of Minshew and all that stuff. But it just pressure him, rattle him, make him see ghosts. And he's definitely not somebody that, you know, you can just expect to just overcome that. It's right now, it's just if he's comfortable and has time, that's where he's going to be dangerous. So you have to make him uncomfortable and not give him that time.
Chris, we've gone through the five keys to the game, so now it's prediction time. I'll go first. I think Sam Darnold is going to bounce back. I don't think he's going to play as well as he did against Dallas, but I do think that he's going to play much, much better than he did against the Patriots. I think he'll have a solid game, but I think that the Jets are going to go on the road and lose. I think that they're going to have a lead sometime late in the third, early in the fourth, but at some point, Gardner Minshew is going to lead one of those drives with an exhausted Jets defense wilting down the stretch. And I like the Jaguars to win this thing about 20-17. So I'm going to say the Jets cover the spread but lose the game.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this all week. And part of that is just because at watching that Patriots game, I was like, I'm never picking the Jets to win another game. And then I was like, well, that's silly and ridiculous. But I think the Jets win this game. I'm going to go 27-23. I think the Jets win this game. I think Darnold bounces back. And I just don't think that Gardner Minshew and the Jags offense is going to light it up enough. I think they'll have like two drives where they just pick the Jets apart, but then that's it. They can chip in a couple field goals here and there. I think Darnold isn't going to look like he did against Dallas, but it'll be closer to that. And I think that they can take advantage and pick their spots against this defense, and they should be able to win this game. It's going to be close, and I clearly wouldn't be surprised if they lose, especially in a scenario like you just said, where they're winning and then they kind of fall apart at the end. I think if they lose, that's probably the most likely way it'll happen. But I'm going to go ahead and say that they bounce back and get this win and win 27-23, something along those lines.
I would not be surprised if that happened at all. I think this one could go either way. I think it's probably going to be a one-score game in either direction. I'm just hoping at this point for a more entertaining football game than we got at MetLife Stadium on Monday, because I don't think I could take another one of those. Chris, thanks so much for hopping on and previewing the action coming up later today at 1 o'clock. As always, much appreciated. As I understand it, you are going to have tons of material up over at your website, jetsinsider.com, after the game. What can people expect to read when they head over there?
Yeah, you have a preview up of the game, and then obviously breaking down everything that happened for the game, how the defense looked and Darnold looked going forward. That'll be a big focus. And then obviously next week we'll do some trade deadline talk. If they do make any trades, have plenty of stuff on that, and then how they will counter that for the rest of the season. But there will be plenty of content up there, especially after the game, once we can take a look. And yeah, please, just a more entertaining game. I can't take any more games like that. I mean, covering this team is not good for my mental health, because it's just depressing all the time after stuff like games like that. So they need to turn it around, if for no other reason, just for my own sake, just for my sanity, because it is depressing covering a team that goes through these types of lulls.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
We talked about the injury report earlier, so now let's bring in our expert on all medical matters to talk a little bit more about it in depth, 35-year orthopedic surgeon Dr. Steven Stoller. Doc, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. I can't say. I watched Monday night's game just like you did, Scott, so it's not as good as I would have hoped.
Oh, that's for sure. The Jets could use some reinforcements, but one guy who is not going to be a reinforcement for them is Kelechi Osemele. Looks like he's done with the team. We know what the whole situation is. This has been playing out in public, but only one side has really been leaking out any information, because the Jets can't leak any information out. Osemele can, because it's his medical information. But as a medical professional, you've noticed a few things throughout the course of this story and some of the stuff that's come out that's raised a red flag with you. What has made you a little suspicious of what you've been hearing from Kelechi Osemele's side?
Well, some of the things that have been reported is one in that Joe Douglas sent a blank MRI report to the physicians in California. And I don't know why he would have the MRI on his possession, but it's difficult to send if you're not connected to the MRI facility via the internet. So sometimes you won't have the reader that will allow you to read the images, and you'll end up with a blank attachment. The other thing is that if you download all the images and you send them, at least for me, it's difficult, and I have to have an IT person or one of my children tell me how to do it properly. So it's something I'm certain was not done deliberately, and it was just a technical problem. The other thing is that the MRI report that was listed, he had a posterior inferior labral tear with a ganglion cyst. And generally, when they form a ganglion cyst, it's usually an older injury. So, I think that the injury probably occurred possibly before he came to the Jets, but it's certainly not something that was recent. The other unusual thing is that I find is that he had 2 second opinions in California that he obviously trusted. And it's strange that after getting those opinions that he went to a third physician in Waltham, Massachusetts to perform the surgery. I find that unusual. And the other thing is, there are just certain names of doctors that you hear frequently for different parts of the body for their expertise. So I'm just surprised he didn't go to one of them. So, that's what I have to add. I have, no connection with the Jets, and I have no connections with any of the players. So, this is just my opinion. And I know it's different than a lot of the sports writers, but, I don't think they know the whole story. And, one thing you can't refute is when a patient tells you how much pain they're in. It is subjective, and everyone has different thresholds. So if he does state that he's in, pain where he can't play, then he can't play.
But he's not the only member of the Jets offensive line that you think has shoulder issues, right? Because didn't you notice something with two of the other members of the offensive line?
Yeah, they're two members, as I keep on, repeating. Brian Winters wears a shoulder harness for, a similar injury. And then I noticed, unless I was mistaken, Alex Lewis, the offensive guard, was also wearing a harness. And so there are two offensive linemen with similar injuries that are playing with their harness.
Let's talk about the rest of this injury report. CJ Mosley is one of the most notable, because we thought he was coming back earlier. He ended up coming back against the Patriots and then looked at half speed. Now the Jets have pulled him out. He's not playing in this game, and they've said that they're taking a deep dive into his groin, which is hilarious and makes me think that they should have done a more careful job of phrasing, or certainly Ian Rappaport should have when he reported the story. But you have a theory on what might be going on with CJ Mosley and why this is taking a lot longer to heal than people originally thought it would.
I think when they investigate further, there's a good chance that he may have what's called a sports hernia. And a sports hernia, a groin sprain, can be misinterpreted as with a sports hernia. And sometimes you can have both, because the groin tendons insert into the pubic ramus of the pelvis at the same location that the lower abdominal muscles do. So if you have pain in that area, you can have one or both. And so I think in this case, the fact that he's not responding to, you know, conservative therapy, that there's a reasonable chance that he has either, in addition to a groin sprain, a sports hernia, or maybe just a sports hernia by itself. And if it is causing him this much pain, then he may require a surgical intervention. Surgical intervention now can be performed endoscopically or with minimally invasive surgery. And the results are very good. So, you know, if he had the surgery done, he certainly would be able to play next year.
And you were saying that you think there may be more than meets the eye with the injuries of Kelvin Beachum and Trenton Cannon too, right?
Yes. I mean, Kevin Beachum is listed as ankle. So I would assume he had an ankle sprain. I think I mentioned that previously. But being that it's taking so long to heal, that I would have to think that he may have a high ankle sprain. And high ankle sprains are notoriously slow healers and therefore require a longer period of time. So, you know, one of the things that I noticed, I think it was this week or last week, that the quarterback for Alabama, Tua, had a second high ankle sprain, which was treated with an internal brace, which is a minimally invasive procedure that allows the ligament to heal with an internal brace while allowing him to play, which he did last year in the ball game after 2 weeks postoperatively, and they say that he will be able to return in 2 weeks. But I have not heard of any NFL players having a similar procedure for a high ankle sprain to allow him to return earlier. So I think he's just going in the conservative treatment, which takes time for this to heal. As far as Trenton Cannon's concerned, I figured he had a, you know, mild sprain. The only mild sprains that would keep him out longer that I can think of would be a Lisfranc injury. And that consists of the ligaments that form the arch of your foot on the top of your foot. And if it's a mild sprain, it still takes a while to heal with mobilization. If it's anything more than that, it requires surgical intervention because it's a complex ligament that needs to be in exact position to hold the bones in place. So if he's not returning, that's a possibility. The other would be a Jones fracture, which is a fracture on the bone on the side of the foot. And that has a notoriously slow healing rate because it has a poor blood supply. And not infrequently, if it doesn't heal conservatively, it requires surgical intervention.
Are you surprised at all that it's taken Chris Herndon this long to come back?
You know, only because Adam Gase says it seemed to intimate that it was a mild strain. And if it was a mild strain, I would have expected him to come back, you know, within 2 to 3 weeks. So if we were told that it was more severe from the beginning, I wouldn't be surprised. So, you know, I guess it is more severe than it was previously described.
Any thoughts on the rest of the guys that are listed on the injury report here? Neville Hewitt, who's not going to play, and then Braxton Berrios and Tremaine Johnson look like they're going to play, but Henry Anderson, it's still up in the air. It looks like he may not play.
Now, again, Henry Anderson seems to be more due to pain, although it also may be that instead of a grade one sprain, it may be a grade two, which is more significant and require more time for it to heal. Because I think if it's just pain management at this point, he should be able to return by now. So I'd have to think that it was more. As far as the other injuries, I think we need to list all the fans that watch Monday night's game for post-traumatic stress syndrome. I'd be glad to give any advice for treatment of any of the fans that had to watch that game, because it was definitely traumatic.
I was in attendance, so I can confirm that indeed it was a traumatic experience. Doc, thanks so much for coming on and talking through all the injuries. As always, really appreciate it. Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody how they can get a hold of you if they want to pick your brain on this stuff?
Yes, I'm on Twitter on both The Aging Athlete, and it's Stephen Stoller, MD. And give me, you know, any information, and I will certainly offer you my opinion and explain anything that you have questions about.
Thanks, Doc. Great job as always. And now it is Sunday, so that of course means that it's time to try and make you a few bucks with my brother Craig Mason, who's going to come in and give his picks. And if you like his picks, and you should, because he's done very well with them, except, and we will talk about this in a second, the fact that he picked the Jets over the Patriots with the points last week. Oops, that didn't work out so well. But the rest of his picks have been really strong this season, so you're going to want to take them over to mybookie.ag and place a wager. We're just about halfway through the NFL season, and so this is a good time to start making money if you haven't already. Or if you have been placing bets, it's a perfect opportunity to make even more money, because they're going to match your very first deposit when you use the promo code OVERTIME. That's right. They will double your first deposit when you use the promo code OVERTIME over at mybookie.ag as soon as you sign up. You can bet on some of Craig's picks. You can bet on your own picks. You can bet on prop bets, whether or not Sam Darnold's going to bounce back in this game and throw two or more touchdowns, whether or not Le'Veon Bell's going to have his first 100-yard game, whether or not I'm going to put my fist through the wall watching Tremaine Johnson. I'd bet yes on that one. You can make bets on any of those props and more, over-unders, the whole deal, at mybookie.ag. MyBookie, you play, you win, and you get paid. And with that, we bring in Craig. So, Craig, last week, the only time that you led us astray was going with the Jets. You had done well with them the week before, betting on them, plus the points against the Cowboys. This time, it didn't work out so well. And the New England Patriots stomped a mud hole in the New York Jets. Let's hope that doesn't happen again this week. I'm curious to see if you think they're going to bounce back, because you are going to pick that Jets-Jaguars game later on. But first, how is everything in Las Vegas?
Going good, going good. Yeah, I mean, I was feeling very confident after I won my first two picks last week. Both easy wins, too. And I was like feeling great, thinking the Jets were going to show up, play real competitive. And that game was just over before it started. I mean, that was just complete disaster. I have to say I was way off on that one, but you know, still 2-1, lost the teaser, lost the Jets. They ruined me from having a good week, but otherwise still feeling good about my picks. And I mean, yeah, everything's good. Just as you and I were talking about off the air, just going to pick up a piece to a crib right now for the baby. And yeah, Friday night in Vegas, no clubbing for me these days. Not that I was ever much of a club guy anyway, but yeah, that's what I'm up to. Nothing super exciting. Maybe I'll grab an In-N-Out burger on the way home if I'm feeling crazy.
Reminds me of old school when Will Ferrell's talking about how the next day he had a big day ahead of him because they were going to go to Home Depot and it could get wild. He might go to Bed Bath & Beyond, but he'd have to see where the day took him. That's you right now, Craig. You're Will Ferrell in old school.
Pretty much, yep.
But Will Ferrell in old school became Frank the Tank. You are not going to become that, but you are going to try and help some people make a few bucks this Sunday. You've got your picks, which have done very well over the course of the season. Of course, the Jets messed you up on week one, and they messed you up last week as well. but we'll see what you think they're going to do coming up later on, because we're going to save them for last. Who's your first pick this week, Craig?
All right, so my first pick here is, again, not typically a type of pick that I would go with, but I'm going to go with the Rams. You know, the Rams, they're only 4-3, but I still think they're, you know, just as good as they were last year, in my personal opinion. And they're playing, arguably, I mean, we all know Miami is probably the worst team in the league, but this team is definitely up there. They're playing Cincinnati, so I'm going to go with the Rams, minus 13.5 at home against Cincinnati. I know it's a big spread. I see Rams by 4 touchdowns in this one. Cincinnati's pathetic. Rams, yeah, they're only 4-3. I think they're due for a big win here, and I just see it being an absolute blowout.
Cincinnati, certainly one of the worst teams in the league. They've had trouble getting out of their own way. The Rams are a team that has their back up against the wall a little bit because they've got the Seahawks in their division. They've got the 49ers. And so they're in a fight for their lives right now. They have got to put a hurting on Cincinnati. We'll see if they do it. But I do like the pick, and I think that there's a good chance they're going to cover the spread. I think 2 touchdowns could very well be a possibility for the Rams. Who do you have as your second pick, Craig?
All right. So my next pick is going to be Tennessee at home, minus 2.5 against Tampa. Not the greatest of games here, both two mediocre teams. Tannehill, believe it or not, has been looking pretty good. I mean, better than Mariota was playing. I like Tennessee at home, minus 2.5 against Tampa Bay as my second pick.
This is going to be an interesting game, Craig, because everybody thought that this was going to be the battle of the top two picks from the 2015 draft, Marcus Mariota for Tennessee and Jameis Winston for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We will see Winston, although he's very much in battle right now. We will not see Marcus Mariota because Ryan Tannehill, who was a top 10 pick in the draft a couple of years before that, the 2012 draft, is going to step in at quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. Very disappointing for Marcus Mariota. Certainly very disappointing for the Tennessee Titans, who were hoping he would be their answer quarterback. Going to be interesting to see how this goes the rest of the way. But Tannehill played really, really well last week. He looks like a good fit in that Tennessee offense, so I like that pick, especially at home. I think there's a very good chance that they win by at least a field goal, which is what they would need to cover the spread. Who do you like for your third pick, Craig?
All right, so my third pick is my absolute favorite pick of the week. Again, said that last week with the Jets, and we saw how that turned out. But this one I really, really like here. Again, things could change because last I heard, Pat Mahomes still might try to come back and play in this game. This is Sunday Night Football. I'm going based off the fact that he's not playing. I love Kansas City plus the 4.5 at home, even with Matt Moore playing, which I'm pretty sure, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm pretty sure he's going to be the starter if Mahomes isn't playing. Mm-hmm. I, you know, again, obviously big drop-off between Pat Mahomes to Matt Moore. No doubt about that, but Kansas City still has a ton of weapons, and Sunday Night Football, I know, again, Green Bay, one of the best teams in the league. People might think I'm crazy for this one, but I don't know. Something's telling me, even with Matt Moore, no Pat Mahomes, I still like Kansas City to win this game, and plus the 4.5 especially. Love Kansas City this week.
I do kind of think you're crazy, but then again, this is a Packers team that lost to the Philadelphia Eagles, a team that has now been exposed to be significantly worse than we thought. Everybody thought they were going to be a Super Bowl contender, and now they're below 500. So anything's possible. And like you said, while I wouldn't be betting on Matt Moore necessarily, I might be tempted to bet on his weapons because Kansas City is loaded with weapons. But this is certainly one of your more daring picks of the week. Let's go to Monday Night Football, Craig. Who do you like in that one?
It's hard to go with Miami, although they did cover the spread against Buffalo last week. And, I mean, Pittsburgh's gone through some injuries with quarterbacks, but I'm still going to take them minus the 14 here against Miami at home. I mean, Miami's, as we talk about each and every week, I honestly would be surprised if they didn't go 0-16. Maybe they get lucky and win one game along the way, but this team is absolutely pathetic. So, yeah, I'm going to pick Pittsburgh minus the 14 in that one.
I've seen a lot of teams over the years that were rebuilding, and so it wasn't like they were loading up to try to win as many games as possible. The talent was what it was, but this is the first time that I can remember where a team almost seemed like they were tanking. Now, obviously, the players aren't trying to play poorly, but the organization certainly is in tank mode, and because of that, There's no way that I would ever bet on the Dolphins. So I'm with you, Craig. I would take the Steelers here. Finally, Craig, before we get to your teaser, let's talk about the Jets. They are 6.5-point underdogs on the road in Jacksonville, coming off an absolute spanking, as we talked about, at the hands of the New England Patriots. Who do you like here?
All right. Well, you know, honestly, after last week, it's kind of hard to have any hope in the Jets anymore. I wouldn't personally pick this game, but obviously, you know, I know you like me to pick the Jets games each week. So if I have to make a pick, I will go with Jacksonville just because, I mean, I know it was the Patriots, but gosh, what we saw last week was absolutely embarrassing. And I hope, listen, as a fan, and, you know, I hope Darnold and everybody turns it around a little bit, but God, that was bad last week. And I hate to say this, and, you know, you and I were talking about this earlier. I don't know if things are going to get any better this season, to be honest. I don't know. I'm scared of where this is going to lead to, and I just hope all we can hope for is that we see some progress in Darnold the rest of the way. But I don't know. I just see it unraveling, and it feels like a 3-4 win season right now. That's how it feels. So I would go with Jacksonville -6.5.
I'll be honest, Craig. I'm not sure what to make of this. This is a game that I know a lot of people were thinking about making a road trip for because a lot of people have friends and family in Florida. It's warm weather as it starts to get cold here in New York. If you are going to make that trip, by the way, and you don't have your tickets yet, you should download the Vivid Seats mobile app. Use the promo code OVERTIME at checkout. You'll get up to $100 off your very first purchase, which could be Jets Jaguars tickets later today. If you were feeling so inclined to make the trip and are looking for tickets now, you'll automatically get enrolled in the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. Plus, you get the Vivid Seats 100% buyer guarantee. Make sure that if you're making this trip, you get good tickets because nobody wants to travel all the way to Florida and sit in the upper deck. Go download the Vivid Seats mobile app, enter the promo code OVERTIME at checkout, and you'll get up to $100 off on your very first purchase. If you're going to this game or if you decide to use that discount for some other event, and like I said, if you're going to this game, it's hard to know what to expect exactly because the Jets got spanked by the Patriots, but we know what they did the week before that against the Dallas Cowboys. The Jaguars have kind of been up and down. Gardner Minshew's been better than we expected, but he's also come back down to earth a little bit. I'm torn on whether or not I like the Jets to cover the spread and to win the game. It's a really tough one, Craig. I don't know what to make out of the Patriot game. Was an anomaly and they'll bounce back? Or is this the way that the rest of the season is going to go? I think that this is going to be a pivotal game in determining which direction the Jets go in. And to be honest with you, Craig, I'm not so sure how easy it would have been for me to pick this game if I were in your shoes. Now that we've gotten through the individual picks, though, let's talk about your teaser. Who do you like this week?
Things seem to be unraveling for the Giants just as they are with the Jets. It's not a good good football season in New York. Well, Buffalo, I guess, technically is a New York team. So if you're a Bills fan, it's a good season for you. But, yeah, so I'm going to go with the Lions at home as a pick'em with the teaser as my first pick.
I like that. I think the Lions should win this game. I've never really thought much of the Giants this season. Daniel Jones got off to a quick start. Got a little lucky, too. That was part of it. But now he's come back down to earth. Looked bad against the Patriots like everybody has, but looked really bad against the Cardinals at home as well. I think that the Lions should be able to take this one. And with the teaser, you're now laying 0 points. So as long as they win, you would get the victory there. So I like that. Who do you have for your second team in the teaser, Craig?
All right. So my second team, as I've done almost every week, backfired on me last week, obviously, with the Jets because they absolutely got crushed. So made me lose my final third pick and my teaser, but this week, again, I am going to go and pick one of my regular picks in my teaser, and I'm going to go with the Rams, -6.5 against Cincinnati. Again, like I said, I see this game being an absolute blowout. I think Cincinnati is one of the worst teams in the league. I still think the Rams are one of the top teams in the NFC, even though their record hasn't shown it. So I would be absolutely shocked if the Rams don't win this game by more than a touchdown.
Craig, you know me. On teasers, I love to go with games where I'm either laying no points or I'm getting points. I hate giving points in a teaser, but if you're going to, this one makes a lot of sense. Like you said, Cincinnati is one of the worst teams in the league, and the Rams are a team that on paper is one of the best. And you would think that this game against the Bengals would be just what the doctor ordered. They should be able to win by two touchdowns, let alone one. So I do like this one, even though my personal preference typically is to pick games where I don't have to lay any points or I'm getting points. So there you have it. Craig likes the Lions even against the Giants and also the Rams -6.5 for his teaser. And you heard his individual picks. He likes Tennessee -3.5 at home against Tampa Bay. He likes the Rams at home -13.5 against the Cincinnati Bengals. On Sunday night, a bit of a surprise. He likes Kansas City +4.5 against Green Bay, despite the fact that Patrick Mahomes is not going to play in this game. And he also likes the Pittsburgh Steelers -14 against the tanking Miami Dolphins. Craig, as always, a pleasure having you on. Really glad that you were able to share your insights. Hopefully, this will be the second week in a row that you are wrong about the Jets, because last week you were wrong because you believed in them. This week, I'm hoping you're wrong because you don't believe in them. But as we wait to see how your picks turn out later today, why don't you go ahead and let everybody know how they can get in contact with you?
All right. So, yeah, if anybody wants to send me a message, cmace86@aol.com and Craig Mason on Facebook. You know, if I happen to have won you guys some money betting sports, or you just feel like being generous, diapers are expensive these days, I'll take any donations anybody wants.
Craig, you should set up one of those registries on Amazon.com or something like that, and we'll have people donate some of their winnings to that.
Oh, my registry is already set up. If you got anybody that wants to donate, I will gladly send them the registry, and they can send some gifts.
There you go. So if Craig helped you win money and you're interested in kicking back a couple of bucks to him, no pressure. Feel free if you like. If you want to give a gift to his soon-to-be newborn baby, you can go ahead and do that. You can email Craig at cmace86@aol.com or, of course, friend him on Facebook and talk to him that way. But obviously not required, just something you may want to do as a little thank you if Craig helped you win some money so far this football season. Craig, we'll talk next week. Enjoy the games. And now it's time for a new segment here on the pregame show. A little look back in Jets history, courtesy of deputy editor of JetsInsider.com, Alan Schechter.
Alan Schechter, deputy editor of Jets Insider here with the Jets flashback moment. It was the 1998 season and the Jets had just finished winning 12 games and an AFC division title. They were hosting their first playoff game since the year 1968 when they won the Super Bowl. And in this January of 1999, on their way to face the Jets were these Jacksonville Jaguars, led by coach Tom Coughlin. Could the expansion Jaguars, or the recent expansion Jaguars, upset the Jets? On the first drive, the Jets took the ball 7 plays, and it ended with a Vinny Testaverde yard touchdown pass from 21 yards to Keyshawn Johnson to give the Jets a 7-0 lead. Moved to the second, and John Hall kicked a 52-yard field goal to give the Jets a 10-0 lead. It looked like the Jets were going to run away with it, but not so fast. Mark Brunell completed a 52-yard scoring strike to Jimmy Smith to pick the halftime score 10-7. How was it going to turn out? Were the Jets going to keep their lead and win it? Were the upstart Jaguars going to upset the New York Jets? To find out more, read my column at JetsInsider.com.
Thanks, Alan. I remember that game well, and you did a great job of chronicling it over at JetsInsider.com. So if you haven't read it yet, go ahead and read Alan's flashback to that game between the Jets and the Jacksonville Jaguars as we close out the show now with our look at the weather, courtesy of our weather expert, Ed Valley, my buddy who runs Empire Weather. You can follow him on Twitter at EmpireWX or at Ed Valley, EdValleyEWX. Ed, take it away, my man.
Thanks, Scott. Meteorologist Ed Valley here with Empire Weather LLC. Just giving you a little weather update for your fantasy leagues and obviously the Jets game as well. And we'll start with the Jets. They're heading down to Jacksonville. I'm actually in Orlando, Florida. So welcome to Florida. If you're making the trek down, it's going to be a whole different world weather-wise down here compared to up in the Northeast. It's going to be quite warm. We're going to be in the mid to upper 80s. With a lot of humidity here on Sunday. And there might even be a few afternoon showers or thunderstorms. I wouldn't count on a thunderstorm, you know, delaying the game or anything, but that is just something to keep in mind. But again, drink lots of water, wear light-colored clothing, bring the sunglasses. It's going to be a summer-like day up in Jacksonville here for that 1 o'clock kickoff. Now, beyond the Jets game, there's really not a whole lot going on except in the Northeast. So, In the Northeast, we have two games going on that we need to worry about. One's at 1 o'clock on Sunday, one's at 4:25. The first one, Eagles at Bills. We're going to be dealing with at least a little bit of shower activity, so something to just keep in mind. But the bigger concern, in my opinion, is going to be the Browns at the Patriots. That's a 4:25 kickoff. And as it stands right now, we got a nasty storm moving up through the Northeast here Saturday night into Sunday. And right now, I think it's going to be pouring rain during this game. So any Browns or Patriots players in your lineups, I would absolutely double check and make sure you absolutely have to have them, because I think this is going to be a low-scoring game with the weather that's going to be ongoing. We're even going to have some wind. We're going to have the wind kind of whipping the rain around. It's going to be muddy. So definitely double check that Browns-Patriots game here on Sunday at 4:25. Otherwise, around the league, I think we're either in a dome or we're going to have pretty nice weather. So that's all I got for this week. Hopefully we can rebound after last week's horrible Monday night disaster. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks, Ed. Great job as always. Also, thanks again to Chris, my brother Craig, Alan, and Dr. Steven Stoller for all being a part of the pregame report. I'll be back just after midnight with a postgame report with Matt Stablecowski of NJ.com and New Jersey Advanced Media. In the meantime, enjoy the game. Let's go Jets. And for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital and TurnOnTheJets.com.